G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
I think none of us wants to be caught sleeping at the wheel when it comes to the influence that we might have as Christian believers, not only in our local community, but in our states and even federally. And so that's where our conversation will head today, talking about where Christians stand on the political landscape here in Australia. It's hard to believe we're already into September. And every day that passes is a day closer to the next federal election. And what's of intense interest this time around is what the playing field might look like when we next go to the polls. Now, you might recall promises of laws to protect religious freedom in Australia. Well, those promises now look pretty insipid, very shallow, as the Attorney General, Michaelia Cash, signals that Christians may need to lower our expectations of what can be delivered by way of the upcoming religious discrimination bill. Well, an opportunity today to survey the political landscape and identify where the Christian voices are likely to come from leading up to the next federal election. Now, you might recall last week we talked about what appears to be collusion between the major parties, left and right, to silence minor parties, including those Christian party voices. A conversation today about really what may be the survival of the Christian voice in Australian politics. Lyle Shelton, the former managing director of the Australian Christian Lobby, is joining us. Now, you'll be familiar with Lyle Shelton as the most outspoken advocate in the No campaign resisting changes to the marriage definition just a few years back. Well, most recently, Lyle Shelton has been named as the successor to replace Fred Nile in the upper house seat held by the Christian Democratic Party in the New South Wales upper house when the Reverend Nile retires in November. Now, the Christian Democratic Party has had a flurry of interest in party memberships since it was revealed the rules are changing around party membership, threatening deregistration of parties who don't increase their membership from what was 500 members to 1,500 members. Well, Lyle Shelton has been a champion of the Christian voice, and our privilege today to capture his thoughts on the political landscape in Australia. Lyle Shelton, a special welcome back to 2020.
Thank you very much, Neil. It's always good to be with you.
Lyle, let's start our conversation today just talking through some of the moves by major parties right now that look like they're trying to inhibit minor Christian parties. What are your thoughts on these latest developments?
Yeah, it's certainly interesting, Neil. The major parties set the rules that the minor parties have to play by. Obviously, those rules are set in the Commonwealth Parliament, and there's currently a bill, or a series of bills actually, before the Parliament in Canberra to deal with party registration and integrity around elections. Many of those reforms are quite good, but the ones that concerns smaller parties like the Christian Democratic Party is this new threshold that would take our membership from 500 to 1,500 if we want to be registered with the Australian Electoral Commission to be eligible to contest the next federal election. So that does create an extra impost. Now, you know, we're blessed to have thousands of supporters of the party. In fact, around about 8,000 people get our emails every week, and that's terrific. But we need to convert more of those into members, and it's been pleasing to see hundreds of people joining recently as a result of our calls for that. But look, in one sense, Neil, while it seems like a bit injustice. I'm not too worried. I believe we'll be able to meet the 1500 threshold. There's obviously nothing we can do about when the big parties collude, but I'm confident people will step up to the plate and support us, because it is important that we have a strong Christian voice contesting at the next federal election.
We might think that the big parties colluding to stamp out minor parties has a focus, and we'll talk about this, how Christian parties are affected by that. But really, there's been so many splinter micro parties that have caused all sorts of issues over the years now. No doubt there is some reasoning why there might be a clamping down here. But what you might be concerned about is the way that Christian parties are affected by that as the government looks to try and tidy up the political landscape. Is that a fair way of looking at it?
Yeah, look, I guess if you want to look at it from the government's point of view, they want to make sure that people who are contesting the election are serious about it. So they've raised that benchmark. I guess you could be a little bit cynical and think, well, maybe they're doing it because they want to have less competition in the marketplace. The interesting thing, though, about it, Neil, is the laws haven't actually passed the parliament yet. The parliament is now in recess for 6 weeks. We heard the announcement last week from the Labor caucus that they would support these bills being put forward by Ben Morton of the Liberal Party. But it looks like, you know, they won't come into effect before the end of the year, because there's a 90-day threshold that they've put into the legislation that would mean you've got 90 days to achieve that new registration. Now, if there's a federal election in December, as some are speculating, and it's just speculation, that would mean these laws probably wouldn't apply. So it might even be a moot point if there is an early election in December, if Scott Morrison decides to go early to try and capitalise on the big cities, Sydney and Melbourne, emerging from lockdown, as is hoped in that December period.
Okay, and that's an interesting point, that maybe our conversation today might not apply to this coming election if it happens early in December. If it happens later and into early next year, then it may have some effect. But I do note, and somebody mentioned to me that, you know, Clive Palmer's outfit, the United Australian Party, has had thousands upon thousands of members who are joining as a result of this idea of you've got to have a certain level of membership or you risk deregistration. So some parties will be taking advantage of this opportunity right now because they want to shore up their base.
Yeah, well, and as the Christian Democratic Party is as well, we've seen a terrific response from people who have become aware of these laws and are joining. And as I say, I'm not too concerned. I do think we'll be able to meet that threshold. In relation to Clive Palmer's party, they've already got a representative in the federal parliament in Craig Kelly. So this membership threshold law doesn't apply to a party that's got a member of parliament in the federal parliament. That is, CDP, of course, only has representation in the New South Wales state parliament.
And interesting, while we're talking about, say, Clive Palmer or other minor parties too, because I guess if you're talking about Christians in politics, you've got Christians perhaps in every single party, whether they be major parties or smaller parties, but there are very few parties now, Lyle Shelton, that will actually say we maintain a Christian ethos. And, of course, we'll know from conversations gone by that if you don't maintain that Christian ethos, a biblical foundation for policy formation, then you're really just getting blown around by every wind that comes along. So the idea of you might have major political parties, you might have minor political parties, whether they be conservative or whether they be progressive, but the Christian party, in some sense here for the Christian believer, stands out as being a very important foundation. If there isn't a Christian party with a firm Christian voice, then somehow or other all the major parties will just be blown around in every direction. What are your thoughts here for the value of the Christian political party?
Well, I think it's absolutely critical, Neil, and that's why when Reverend Niall asked me if I would come and join his political party and be his successor, I thought that was an incredibly important opportunity, because his party has been around for over 40 years. It is the only Christian political party with parliamentary representation. And the opportunity to continue that legacy over 40 years, and to see that go on into the future and not just disappear when Reverend Niall retires, but for there to actually be an opportunity for that party to have an ongoing future, I think is really important, because it is very unique. There are no other Christian parties, as I say, with political representation, and it is worth keeping that foothold that has been gained in the parliament. It's an important influence of leaven, salt and light, to use those biblical metaphors. And I've seen firsthand just how important that Christian influence is in the parliament. Now, of course, there's Christians in most of the political parties, and similarly, they can have influence as well, and they should. But it's vital that there's an opportunity for Christians to vote for a party which is uncompromisingly Christian in its values and will be that strong Christian voice. And then, of course, people can allocate their preferences where they like after that. But I think the importance of having that foothold is very much worth preserving and seeing that legacy go on into the future, because we all recognise that our society has been slipping over the last several decades. It's getting worse, and we really do need to turn things around, not to give up, not to despair, but we need to continue to shine light into politics, which is a very dark place and an unprincipled place, to bring those biblical principles into our public policy, as we should in a democracy.
You know, the question begs itself, the really, really serious question. So if everyone listening to our conversation today just ignores the idea that Christian parties are in need of support and in need of those votes to actually maintain their presence and their capacity to influence, the question arises, what happens when there is no Christian voice? If the conversation we're having today is ignored, and people say, well, you know, just let those Christian parties, die a natural death. There is serious consequences here. And I wonder if you've thought this through, Lyle. What happens if there is no Christian voice in Australian politics?
Well, Neil, it means that no one is standing up for human rights for the unborn. Okay, there's some individuals in the major parties who are pro-life, but very few will actually sustain the debate in the public square. There's no one to stand up for the natural family, the idea that mum, dad and the kids is the basic group unit of society. We believe it's a God-ordained group unit, but you don't have to be a Christian to believe that, to believe that it's the basic unit of society, to advocate for that. There are no political parties that advocate for that. Political correctness means they have to defer to all other types of family formation and don't have the courage to say that we need to preference in public policy mum, dad and the kids. And of course, the issue of freedom, religious freedom, in particular freedom of speech, has very few allies in our mainstream political discourse these days. And so this is why you need that unashamed Christian voice to prioritise these issues. Yes, as I say, there are some people who believe these things in the major parties and some of the other minor parties, but very few will sustain the public discourse. And the reason our values and our issues have been sliding to the back of the queue to low priority in our public policies because we haven't had champions sustaining the debate in public. And that's what a Christian political party can do and does. And it gives people the opportunity to vote their values on the ballot paper on election day. And so I think it's absolutely critical. If we lose that, we lose the voice inside Parliament. It's great to have voices outside like Australian Christian Lobby and Family Voice Australia and other advocacy groups. We need them, but we need the people on the inside. And we do need, I believe, a Christian political party that's unashamed and is strong in its advancing of Christian values.
Somehow or other, you've got to articulate what those Christian values are and the reliance on a Christian party to do that. And just last week, I was talking to your chief, the Reverend Fred Niall, and he was reflecting on the very foundations of the Christian Democratic Party. And he said, what we did was we chose those biblical foundations that churches stood on. And that was what the values were for the Christian Democratic Party. Of course, in every other party that's not tied to a Christian base, they do get blown around. And every time there's an election, set their priorities or their policies according to what they think will be popular, not on what they think will be a firm foundation. Any thoughts here on the foundations that you're going to be standing on when you succeed, Fred Nile, those sorts of biblical foundations for a party that aren't going to change?
Well, you're right, and Reverend Nile is right. It is these bedrock principles which come from our Christian understanding from the Bible. As I say, you know, we will not be blown around in the wind when it comes to the sanctity of human life. No other political party holds that view. The family, marriage, you know, freedom of religion, freedom of speech. All of these things are non-negotiables to us, and we know that these are the basis of a free and functioning society. They're for the common good, but unfortunately, politics very much is a game of pragmatism. It's a game of Machiavellianism, where people just use power to get power and do whatever it takes. It's not based on principles, and we are suffering as a nation because our politicians don't believe in anything anymore. They do change with the breeze, but these timeless values of life, family, freedom, they need advocates in the political system, in the parliaments, and that's what we bring, and that's what we'll never change. And if you think back over Reverend Nile's career, I was a teenager when I first heard of him. But here he was saying that the values of the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras were not conducive to a flourishing society. Guess what? He was right. He was one of the first to be campaigning against pornography. Now we have the Me Too movement. You know, the feminists are on board with it now, and much of the wider society. So, these are truthful things that we advocate for, and we haven't changed, and the need for these values to be advocated in public, in parliaments, has not diminished despite the passing of 40 years. In fact, if anything, we've been proven right, and it proves the need that we need to redouble our efforts.
Visions 2020 with Neil Johnson, a biblical perspective on life, culture, and current events.
1-800-316-316. If you'd like to participate in our conversation, our special guest is Lyle Shelton. He's being parachuted into the upper house seat in the New South Wales Parliament that has been held by the Reverend Fred Nile for 40 years. So we're talking about Christians, we're talking politics, we're talking Christian political parties, we're talking about the broad landscape of politics in Australia and where the Christian voices will come from in the lead up to the next federal election. At 1-800-316-316 to be part of our conversation. Lyle, just want to touch on something so, so important. We raise it on this conversation fairly regularly, the idea of religious freedom. This is such an important element because religious freedom affects every Australian, not just a few churchy types. But if you don't have religious freedom, then you have a rise in authoritarianism. I wonder if you've got some thoughts on what is happening in Australia right now and just the importance of understanding the value of religious freedom.
Yeah, it's really important, Neil, and you and I have discussed this before, but one of the reasons that I was so invested in the marriage debate during my time at ACL and then during the plebiscite period was because if you change the definition of marriage, and then that then impinged on people's ability to hold to the Christian view of marriage, well, suddenly your conscience has been crushed, and that's what we're seeing. And freedom of religion is the most basic of human rights because it allows people to form a conscience, form their consciously held beliefs about how life works, how the universe works, what the bigger picture is. And obviously, we as Christians hope people will see that to be our Lord Jesus Christ and the Almighty God. But people are free to, you know, pursue other religious worldviews if they like. But that freedom of conscience has to be there, because if people don't have freedom of conscience, then there is no freedom. And then there's no freedom of speech that then comes as a result of being then able to articulate your conscientiously held views. And then, of course, freedom of association flows from that because you want to gather with other like-minded people. So if we lose freedom of religion, we lose freedom of conscience, we lose freedom of speech, we lose freedom of association. And that's a little bit of a slide that we're on, particularly as Agendas have come. I mean, the LGBT agenda is a classic example, but there's others. The whole cancel culture thing, which diminishes our ability to speak what we believe to be true as a result of our consciences that have been formed as a result of our spiritual beliefs, then we're losing our freedom. So we've got to protect this, and it's vitally important, and it is under threat at the moment. And Australians feel it. Christians feel it in the workplace. They feel it in what they're allowed to say about things like marriage and the truth about gender, etc. So we've just got to keep this issue in front of our politicians and in front of the wider Australian community, who I think intuitively believe in freedom of speech, but don't understand that the pressure on freedom of religion is eroding these precious human rights.
You know, my thoughts run wild with the idea of the importance of those minor Christian political parties, because as you mentioned, all of those issues of freedom, what you believe, the freedom of association, all of those too lead to the freedom of political communication and of academic freedom too. And if you don't have academic freedom in our universities, because there are thought police telling you what you can believe, and you have politicians who are in our federal parliament and our state parliaments who are afraid to put a Christian position because of the pylon that happens, even political communication is going to be stifled in that sense. So when you have all of this stifling of the freedoms, if you don't have freedom to believe, religious freedom, this rise of authoritarianism is an absolute, it's going to happen. I mean, it's guaranteed. We're already seeing it happen right now. So so if you don't do something about it at the foundation end, all you're in for is a rise of authoritarianism.
Very much so, Neil. I think we've all heard it said over, you know, probably the last few decades, any of us that are a few years old will have heard the phrase, don't impose your views on me or on other people. And it's particularly directed at religious people. And it comes from this postmodernist idea that no one's truth is better than anyone else's truth, so don't impose your ideas. But in the meantime, the secular elite, if I can use that term, they're busy imposing their views on the rest of us. And the reality is, and we've lost sight of this truth in our democracy, in a democracy, someone's views will be imposed. That's just how the system works. But it can only be imposed by agreement. And we've, you know, up until quite recently, had a system that relies on persuasion, proper debate, a civil public square where we disagree, but we do it in a way that's civil and friendly to one another. That's been the hallmark of our Western societies and of Australia. There's been, you know, deep and bitter divisions over our short history as a nation, but generally it's been civil. We've had no wars. We use our parliament. We use our freedom of the media, freedom of press, to thrash all these things out. But at the moment, what we're seeing now is an imposition by a secular elite that's saying, well, you can't say believe what you believe about marriage anymore. You can't believe what you believe about human rights for the unborn, because that's imposing your view. And by the way, we're going to make a law that says you can't pray outside of an abortion clinic. So suddenly, you know, this totalitarianism is coming in and our freedoms and liberties are being restricted. And that goes to our ability to organise politically, whether it's as a minor party like the Christian Democratic Party or other people that want to give expression to their deeply held views in the democratic process.
A touch on history here, because since the marriage debate, you had a foray into politics and were serving there in some sense alongside Corey Bernardi with the Australian Conservatives, and combined a whole lot of minor parties, including some Christian parties in there. But then when that was closed down after the last federal election, there was a feeling of loss in all of that. And I wonder whether we might just touch on that for a moment, because you were a part of what was going on there, and you would be feeling that acutely, how those parties like Family First were a part of that, and people had put their blood, sweat and tears into the formation of what looked like a party with some foundation Christian values. That was a tremendous loss if we look at that in hindsight.
Yeah, no, you're quite right, Neil. It is good to look at the history. You know, why did Family First arise, obviously the Christian Democratic Party under Reverend Nile, one of the first sort of Christian minor parties, probably the first. And then, of course, more recently, Corey Bernardi's attempt, which I was a part of, which didn't succeed. But these minor party movements on the conservative side are often with a Christian base and Christian foundation and a lot of Christians involved arose because of the disillusionment with what is going on in the Liberal Party and the National Party, and feeling like even those parties were drifting to the left. They weren't there was no place or little place for people who wanted to stand up for human rights, for the unborn, for the natural family, for freedom of speech and freedom of religion. We were finding ourselves even marginalised in the conservative side of politics, notwithstanding the fact that there are many good Christians in that side, but they have become marginalised voices. And of course, the pressure in the Liberal and the National parties to shut up on these really important issues that we as Christians feel we can't shut up on about. The pressure was, no, talk about the economy, talk about something else other than, you know, so-called moral values or social issues. But you and I know, Neil, and your listeners know that we need advocates for these important social issues, and we can't, in a advocacy system, not advocate for the truth about these important issues that go to the very heart of the sort of society we are, the family unit, human life, etc., freedom. We can't not talk about these things. And so because people are feeling squashed and marginalised in the Liberal and National parties, they've coalesced around various minor party movements. And I think we're still seeing, you know, a shaking and a sorting out. But I encourage people. I think it's a good and a healthy thing, because it sends a message to the Liberals and the Nationals that there's a groundswell of people who want these issues to be represented in the democratic process.
Lyle, if we were talking about some of the parties that are still surviving, Christian parties, they're going to need help just as much as the CDP is at the moment. So for Christians who are listening to us in Western Australia, where you've got the Australian Christians Party, you've got some reformation of the Family First SA Party in South Australia. There's another Christian outfit called Australia One, and Ricardo Bossi leading that one. Bob Day, who first formed the Family First Party, he's got another political outfit called the Australian Family Party. So there are a bunch of Christian voices there. Your thoughts around any of those groups?
Yeah, look, I know some of the players in some of those groups, not all of them. And Neil, look, I respect the efforts that people are making to engage as Christians in the political process, conservative people. It's obviously very important now. I guess the downside is that we, can be fragmented. There's a lot of different groups there, and there's even some that we haven't mentioned, like the Democratic Labor Party, which has been around since the 40s and 50s. They still have a presence now, and they're very much motivated by, Catholic social justice teaching and certainly support all the social values that you and I would in terms of life and the family, etc. So there's certainly plenty of choice, and I would just encourage people to, do their due diligence at election time. From my point of view, obviously, while I'd like to see the Christian Democratic Party successful, the cause is the cause, and wherever we can find common cause with people who champion Christ's values in politics, then obviously that's worthy of support. And you know, your listeners, as they go to vote, will make their decisions. But there certainly is quite a movement out there. I would hope as we get closer to elections, we can find ways certainly to collaborate where there's like-mindedness, where possible, and certainly that people can, cast that informed vote and send a message to the major parties who really are letting us down. And you mentioned, the need for us to lower our expectations on religious freedom. That's a real shame. And the reason why Michaelia Cash, the Attorney General, is saying that is because members of the Liberal Party are undermining her efforts to try and provide a genuine religious freedom bill. And that's a great shame because we just can't trust, sadly, the major parties to deliver.
And interestingly, that's the Attorney General trying to soften up the Christian community by saying lower your expectations. But there is this understanding when I'm talking to Christian commentators around this that says, wait a minute, no, we don't need to soften our expectations. This was the promise that was made when the marriage definition changed. knowing that these were the sorts of things that were coming upon the nation of Australia, that religious freedoms would need to be protected here because they come under assault from the other side. I'm talking about the LGBTQI plus side. And so the assault that comes from there, there needs to be some level of protection for religious freedom because it is going to increasingly come under assault. But just quickly, Lyle, we won't get off on that tangent here right now because we're talking about political parties. But since the last federal election, as we mentioned, Australian Conservatives that you were a part of, well, the demise of Australian Conservatives. Then, of course, after the last election, the Rise Up Australia Party, which had the support of a lot of Christians too, was voluntarily deregistered by the Australian Electoral Commission. So some of those political voices that were on the landscape are no longer there. And let me ask you here, and we've talked about this before, but just to recap very quickly, a lot of Christians who supported those Christian-based parties then said, we better go and join a mainstream party. So they went to the Liberal Party, but there was resistance from the Liberal Party. Your thoughts here, Lyle?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, I think it's terrific that people want to engage in politics, whether it's minor party or if those avenues don't quite work out, as Australian Conservatives didn't, then to go to, you know, the Liberal and the National parties. I was one of those in the wake of the 2019 federal election that then sought to join the LNP in Queensland in my home state. But I was blocked from joining, and I know many other Australian Conservatives were as well. And I think that came as a bit of a shock to us, even after, you know, many of us had served a year out in the wilderness, which is fair enough. I understand they, you know, want there to be a period of separation if you've gone and joined a minor party. But the punishment went, you know, well beyond that which was reasonable, and it seemed to be sending a message that people with conservative and Christian values weren't welcome in the LNP in Queensland. And I know the case, you know, in other parts of Australia too. I know some Australian Conservatives who've had trouble getting back in the Liberal Party in Victoria. So that's disappointing. But on the whole, though, Neil, I think it's vitally important that that Christians are engaged. We are suffering because of our disengagement from politics as Christians. You know, Australia's been a pretty good place to live in for, you know, for many, many years. But in recent decades, we have seen a cultural decline. We've seen politics open the gate to things that have caused harm in our community, whether it's pornography, whether it's policies which cause the family to break down, whether it's the redefinition of marriage, of course, the life issues we've been talking about. And so this is all because there haven't been advocates for the truth inside politics. And what I'm detecting through, you know, these minor party moves, through people joining the major parties, is that Christians are starting to stir and starting to say, no, we actually have to take responsibility and stand up and get our hands dirty by getting involved in the political process. And so I encourage that wherever. Obviously, love to see people join the CDP, but I encourage activism wherever people feel that God is opening a door for them.
Let me put you on the spot with some hard questions here, Lyle Shelton, because I know people will respect your impressions about what's going on in the political landscape. It's very difficult to be a Christian in the Labor Party, given that Labor policies are often, certainly on social policies, almost anti-Christian, those sorts of things that are diametrically opposed to a Christian position. But we have a Christian Prime Minister who leads the Liberal Party, but I'm wondering your thoughts here, because the Liberal Party is not a Christian party, and even though there's a Christian Prime Minister, lots of the policies in the Christian in the Liberal Party are quite anti-Christian too.
Yes, look, it really is difficult, you know, and this landscape has changed very quickly in the last 10 years, and certainly the LGBT political movement has been the catalyst for much of this change in both sides of politics. So, for instance, in Labor, you cannot be a member of the Labor Party and not support same-sex marriage. It's not even a conscience vote anymore. And the party is aggressively pro-abortion. It is pro-transgender, so encouraging the idea that children's gender is fluid. That's all lock, stock and barrel Labor policy. So I can't see how a Christian can in all good conscience, be a member of Labor. In the Liberal Party, it's not quite as enforced, but certainly all of those elements I just mentioned are there and believed by significant cohorts of people in the Liberal Party, like the ones that are trying to undermine the Religious Freedom Bill at the moment, like the New South Wales Nationals that are pushing for euthanasia in the New South Wales Parliament. So it's a mixed bag on the coalition. There's still some good people there, but sadly they don't stand up enough. I know that some of them do work tirelessly behind the scenes, but the debate has to be held in public. We live in a democracy where persuasion is the currency, and it's the way that we solve our political differences. And if we have differences on key issues of social policy, and there's no voice in the public square by politicians, then we're going to lose every time. And that's why we're losing, because of that lack of public voice. And that's why I've been very concerned for the Liberal and the National Party for some time. Despite the good people there, they don't speak up. And that's a real problem. And I think that's why we're seeing this rise in minor parties, particularly Christian engagement in minor parties, because the Liberals and the Nationals just don't have the will or the courage to stand up for the truth anymore.
The good people, the Christians, are not speaking up. Well, I'm inviting listeners to join us. 1-800-316-316. If you want to join in our conversation, let me ask you about some of the other minor parties that are on the landscape here, Lyle Shelton. The Liberal Democrats, a little bit of revitalisation there under the leadership of Campbell Newman, the former Premier of Queensland, a Libertarian party. What are your thoughts for the Liberal Democrats? Because Christians might be thinking, well, you know, I'm not warming to the Christian parties. They've got to attract my attention here. What about some of these other so-called conservative-style parties? What are your thoughts about the Christian, the Liberal Democrats, rather?
Yeah, the Liberal Democrats have been around for about 20 or 30 years. They had a Senator, David Lionhelm, listeners might remember, for many years in the Senate. A lot of conservative-leaning people on the centre-right of politics are attracted to them because they have a pro-freedom message. They are a pro-free market economy. So there's many areas of commonality. But the thing that Christians in particular, not just Christians, but everyone who cares about these values needs to watch with the Liberal Democratic Party, they are a libertarian party. Now, libertarianism, in my view, is just as bad as the extreme left, because they hold the same views on abortion, euthanasia, legalising drugs. So because of this libertarian view of freedom, it's like anything goes. Now, they would say, so long as it doesn't hurt other people, but it's very much a flawed logic, because no man is an island. You know, if you open up society for drugs, for cannabis and, you know, heroin and all this sort of stuff, which is what they want to do, euthanasia, it does, of course, affect other people. But they think it doesn't, and they think freedom should be the paramount value. So I would caution people about the Lib Dems. And if you've been watching Campbell Newman on Sky News, as I have, he's one of the biggest advocates for euthanasia, which is going to cause all sorts of pressure on vulnerable people to allow themselves to be euthanized because of the pressure that comes as a result. It's a terrible policy. So the Lib Dems, I think, yes, there's going to be many things that will be attractive in terms of their freedom message, but beware that they extend freedom to the killing of the unborn, to euthanasia, to drugs, and to all sorts of and pornography as well.
Okay, let me run by you fairly quickly here, perhaps even Pauline Hanson's One Nation. They've got representation in various opportunities and standing for some good things. What's your overall opinion of Pauline Hanson's One Nation?
Look, a mixed bag. Pauline has always been a grievance politician, so she's good at articulating grievance, not always at solutions. Her colleague Mark Latham in the New South Wales Parliament is terrific on so many issues. He's really stood up on a lot of Christian values, religious freedom, the gender issues, etc. And of course, Malcolm Roberts, Pauline's colleague in the Senate, is terrifically pro-life and a good man. But, and there's a big but, Pauline herself is pro-euthanasia, has pro-abortion in the past, I know Mark Latham's colleague in the New South Wales upper house will probably, you know, I think has indicated he'll vote for the euthanasia legislation. So they're a mixed bag. There's good and there's, you know, some bad in them. And again, people will have to, you know, really evaluate that as they go to vote.
We already had a little mention of Clive Palmer's party, United Australia Party. Any thoughts on where they stand on any of these sorts of social issues? Is there any foundation at all?
Look, my understanding is that Clive Palmer himself has a Catholic background and some sort of a Catholic faith. He's pro-life, no doubt about that. But where his party stands and what they're prepared to do on these issues, I don't know. Again, you know, Clive's interest in politics seems to be as a protest party, very simplistic slogans, and seems to be trying to attract a protest vote, essentially to try and send a message to the Liberal Party. So, look, I would probably exercise caution with Clive Palmer's party, to be honest.
Let me just ask your impressions about your own party now, the Christian Democratic Party, because if we hear these sorts of, you know, ways that you can examine what other minor parties on the political landscape look like, we mentioned that the Christian Democratic Party been around for 40 years. What an amazing track record that is. Biblical foundation aligned with what the majority of churches would say is a biblically right way to look at the world and to be able to make an assessment around certainly a lot of these social policies. Some people might say Christian Democratic Party a little too narrow, just focusing on just these few sort of moral issues. What are your thoughts for the Christian Democratic Party? Is there a burgeoning way of looking at policy formation across all sorts of the difficult issues around the social spectrum? What are your thoughts here for the party that you're aligning yourself with?
Yeah, well, look, I'm obviously still reasonably new to it, and of course the party's been around for 40 years, and of course Reverend Nile and others who have been with him in the parliament during that period, of course, have had to consider a whole range of legislative matters, everything from infrastructure through to, you know, tobacco reform. And of course, Reverend Nile has been terrific in terms of reforming people's exposure to smoking, you know, gambling, a whole range of issues. And of course, has to vote on everything from the budget through to, you know, child protection policy, the whole gamut of things. So it's not a narrow party. It's a party that, because it is in the parliament, has to consider all of those issues. But nonetheless, its distinct value proposition is that it's the only party that will sustain a debate on these key social issues which are neglected by the major parties. And I think that's the important thing. We need a party that will be like, you know, will be relentless in sustaining a public debate on these issues which the major parties don't want discussed in public. And because they're not discussed, people are not hearing the argument. So we make no apologies. And even if that means, you know, people criticise us for being narrow, well, you know, it's better to be narrow, because if we're not focusing on these things, no one else will. But as I say, I'm hasten to add, they're not the only things that a party like the CDP focuses on. We had similar criticism at ACL as well. You know, when you've got a hot debate like the marriage debate, people hear you a lot on that, but they don't see all the other work you're doing on a whole range of other issues.
Distinctive values, and values that are not going to change. It means that you're actually going to be quite predictable on a whole lot of issues, because you come from a Christian foundation, because you come from a basis of biblical values that actually permeate all of these elements of policy formation, whether they're on those social issues or whether it's on bigger economic and, you know, those sorts of issues that help to form a whole nation. Now, let me ask you here, Lyle, the idea that, CDP is in New South Wales. It's an upper house seat in the New South Wales Parliament that you'll be moving into. But the CDP has stood candidates all over Australia in federal elections. Is that the plan this coming federal election? The CDP, is it going to be prominent? Or is there a need for people to jump on board now to actually make those things happen?
Yeah, look, yes, we would like to be prominent around the nation in the federal election, and Reverend Niall said that last week on your program. His vision, and certainly my vision in coming into it, is certainly to have a national presence. Now, obviously, we've got to be realistic with the resources that we've got, but one of the exciting things that we've seen, Neil, is we've seen 6,000 people come into the party as supporters. As I say, not all of those are members, but they're supporters who are getting our news, and hundreds of them are donating, which is terrific. And there's a firm base in New South Wales, but there's also people all over the country. And I believe this federal election is really, really important. I want to see candidates on the ballot paper who are standing up for religious freedom. And if that's under a Christian Democratic banner, that people know they can go into the ballot box and into the polling booth, I should say, and vote for someone who they know is going to be standing up for religious freedom. I think that's an important thing. I think we can send a clear message to both sides of politics that there is a strong vote out there and concern on that issue in particular. That's what I'd love to see us being able to contribute at the next federal election.
You mentioned there's been hundreds of members who have joined or rejoined the Christian Democratic Party ever since it came to light that there's some collusion between the major parties, an endeavour to stamp out minor parties by changing the membership rules from 500 members up to 1,500. So there's been an influx of members at the CDP. No doubt there's room for a few more today, Lyle. What are your thoughts for people who are thinking about political party membership, and here's your opportunity for a free kick on why should people become members of the CDP today?
You're too kind, Neil. I do. I really appreciate your and Vision's interest in the political discussions all the time. And look, obviously, we would love to see people, if they are resonating with what we're saying today, to join the CDP. They can go to cdp.org.au, and you'll see a button there that says join. Our membership fees have been reduced to half price till the end of September, and that's a way, obviously, to encourage more members, particularly as we need to accelerate membership as a result of these mooted changes by the government.
Well, we've been talking about Christian voices in the political landscape, and I'll just encourage listeners to take note there. And if you're not very familiar with the Christian Democratic Party or what it is to have some level of party membership, I'm sure there'll be details at the cdp.org.au website. Of course, Lyle Shelton has been writing about a lot of the issues that have been arising, challenging issues that you can find on his website too, lyleshelton.com.au. But the CDP website, cdp.org.au, I mentioned Lyle Shelton is being parachuted into that seat that's been held for 40 years by the Reverend the Honourable Fred Niall, who is retiring in November. And so that time's rolling around quickly too. It's a new chapter in the life of Lyle Shelton. You might be familiar with the book that he wrote just a year or two back called I Kid You Not. That one was entitled Notes from 20 Years in the Trenches of the Culture War. Well, there's a new book, no doubt, in the making for the future, with all of the challenges and all of the ways that there'll be controversies to be able to resolve. So Lyle Shelton, our guest today, and by the way, if you want that book, it is available too in the Vision store. Lyle Shelton, always good getting your insights. Thanks so much for updating us on your thoughts on the political landscape today on 2020.
Neil, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you so much for the conversation.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.